His name is Peter Baldwin, and he's the founder of Bird Dogs Shorts. You've probably seen him on Shark Tank, where Mark Cuban obliterated his pitch. Look, Mark, he'll admit it. The invention of the first ever stretch khaki shorts that feel amazing, look amazing, and can wear literally anywhere wasn't his best idea. But he's got more, like Dog Trader. Just like Auto Trader, but you can sell your old dog. Eh? Mark, I know you'd invest if you just gave him one more shot. So go to birddogs.com/radio and join the 2 million men who think Bird Dogs shorts are a great idea. Or DM Mark Cuban and tell him to give Peter one more shot.
Life comes with a lot of decisions, and it can be hard to know the right path sometimes. A therapist can help you map out what you really want so you trust yourself to make great choices and feel excited about the future. BetterHelp offers convenient, professional online therapy on your schedule, however you want it, by phone, chat, or video call. Let therapy be your map with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/positive today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/positive.
Oh, you guys, it has been a day. Oh, my gosh. Do you ever have one of those days where it's just one thing after another and all hell breaks loose? Just, I don't know if that's a good sound effect or not. Maybe you couldn't hear it. That was the sound effect of all my plans and my organized life and my organized 48 hours going and blowing up. Oh my gosh. But it does not matter, because once this mic goes on, locked in. I see you. I see you. Thank you so much for hanging out with us. My final show of the work week. And so it's going to be the best show of the work week. I will make that promise, that vow to you, mostly because we have got some fantastic audio for you to hear. Actually, that's not true. It's because I'm here and I just had a pregame meal of squash. Squash. It's the first time in my entire career I've ever had summer squash as my pregame meal. But you know, when you're traveling and you're trying to get rid of everything in your fridge. So for dinner, I finished up the spinach and some of the vegetables. I actually have cucumber to take with me to my mom's tomorrow. I frequently travel with vegetables because I don't want to leave them in my fridge. So I have a few vegetables, maybe a couple of mushrooms that are left over. Anyway, for the most part, though, finished the spinach, finished most of my veggies, but still had these two summer squash that I had purchased. And I love summer squash, but I decided it was too much to take them with me to Texas. So instead, I cooked them, a little olive oil, some salt and pepper, sauteed them on the stove and brought them with me to work. So I just had them as my pregame meal. First time ever. I think that is what will make this the best show of the week. The pregame meal of squash. That and Joey Votto. Oh, just wait. Just wait until you hear Joey Votto. It is Hall of Flame material. And I don't know how anybody beats. Ooh, I have the hiccups. I don't know if that's the squash. I don't know how anybody beats Joey Votto in our next Hall of Flame induction. It is priceless, you guys. You do not want to miss it. It might be something we use once an hour. Also, our guest on this edition of the show got into a bit of a, I wouldn't call it a war, maybe a Twitter battle with an NFL player. That was after we booked him. So it'll be fun to hear his side of the story. That's all I'm going to tell you for now. Maybe I'll give you a little more of a hint and a tease coming up later on the show. Before we actually get to him, he is legit the last few minutes of the entire show. So our guest will not join us until the last segment of the show. It's a long time to wait. If you miss it, you're definitely going to need the podcast because, yeah, he is the star of the Twitter universe, at least for a couple hours. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. You can find me on Twitter, A-Law Radio, and also on our Facebook page, After Hours with Amy Lawrence. We've got a little more of this running back undertone to the start of training camp. This time it's Najee Harris speaking out about why running backs deserve to be valued differently than they are. So that continues. We've got Stephon Diggs, who is speaking out for the first time himself at the start of Bills camp about what happened during OTAs when he left, did not practice with his teams, left the facility, and we got some cryptic remarks from Josh Allen after his coach said, oh, yeah, I'm a little concerned that he's not here. And then Josh Allen is talking about better communication and his responsibilities as the quarterback and one of the captains, and nothing from Diggs. Nothing from Stephon Diggs going back now a couple of months until today. You do not want to miss Diggs. Jimmy Garoppolo already loves Vegas. Sam Howell is ready to go as the QB1 in Washington. We've got an official QB1 in Carolina. Oh, and in Green Bay as well, where the former QB1 reached out to the current QB1 with a message. Yeah, there's so much QB stuff. It's going to be awesome. But Joey Votto. Did I mention Joey Votto? Just wait. Joey has a future as a full-time analyst or announcer, if that's what he wants. Or he could be a comedian. The guy is hysterical. And he's off the cuff. He could be one of those guys who does improv for a living. Do you all remember Brad Heller? Brad Heller used to do improv once a week. He went to a club or a group and would do improv for fun once a week. That's not something I can do. Improv and talking for 4 hours a night off the cuff are two completely different things. I could not do improv and expect that it would be funny. People laugh at me. They don't laugh with me. I have to tell you this really cute story, actually, and then we'll get started with the U.S. Women's National Team at World Cup. Actually, having to play from behind, which doesn't happen very often for Team USA. My niece, my older niece, is an engineer, and she does presentations for clients every now and then. A lot of what she works on is top secret. The testing is top secret, but her general focus is unmanned flight. So that's really, I mean, we know a little more as the family, but that's all I'm allowed to say. It's unmanned flight. Anyway, she does presentations for clients on her particular pieces. She's in design. And so she's a mechanical engineer who helps to design particular parts for these machines, drones in many cases, that are part of this unmanned flight facility where she works. Every now and then, she'll do a presentation that requires a bunch of prep. And whether it's solo or whether it's with a partner, she prepares. She practices. I'm really proud of her for doing that. And she gets nervous because talking in front of people is not her favorite thing. Well, apparently, she just did a presentation for a client 2 weeks ago. And because so many people are on vacation, one of the other people in her group was unavailable. And so she had to do the entire presentation herself. 2 hours. She talked for 2 hours straight. And she said, I was so tired. I was so exhausted. I thought about you and how you talk for 4 hours a night. And I could never do that, Auntie Amy. She said, I barely got through 2 hours over the course of a week. I can't even imagine how you do 4 hours a night. I don't actually know how I do 4 hours a night either. It's a gift, I guess. Uh-huh. Anyway, that encouraged me because she was thinking of me. Most of the time, my nieces forget what I do for a living. One of my favorite stories about Deanna, and this is when she was already out of college. So she was 22 maybe. And I was annoyed at her for something. I don't know. I think maybe because she insisted on putting on makeup before we did our Christmas morning celebration, something like that. And she was talking about how she had to take a selfie or she had to do a video or something. Thank God she grew out of that. Anyway, I said to her, "Are you going to be famous, Deanna?" And I don't know what kind of snarky comment she made. And I said, "Whatever, Deanna, I'm the most famous person you know." Also being sarcastic. And she replies with, she rolled her eyes, "I know, Auntie Amy." She is unimpressed. She and my other niece are completely unimpressed with my job. So it's kind of funny that she thought of me before she did her 2-hour presentation and then afterwards when she was exhausted. So I feel very validated. Not everyone can do this job. 4 hours of talking a night, but I definitely couldn't do improv. So I'll give Joey Votto that. Wait till you hear it. It is, yeah, it is off the cuff and it is brilliant. All right, so find us on Twitter or Facebook. We've got QB news coming up, plus Joey Votto. But Team USA on the pitch again, game number 2 in group play at the Women's World Cup Down Under. So I believe this game was also in New Zealand, though not in Auckland, New Zealand, different place in New Zealand, and Wellington, New Zealand. Believe it or not, the Americans were trailing after 17 minutes. And in the first half, it was clear that the Netherlands was better in pretty much every facet of the match. They possessed the ball for longer. They were able to keep the ball in the U.S. zone for longer. Technically, their passing was on point. Now, the United States had more shots on goal, but the Netherlands, they were way more efficient with the ball. And there were times when it felt like the United States was chasing, just kind of following the ball around. Have you ever seen swarm soccer? Little kids with their swarm soccer? It's like wherever the ball goes, a group of kiddos goes too. The United States wasn't quite that bad, but it felt like at times there wasn't great spacing and they were on their heels, kind of chasing the ball around and chasing their opponents around. So the Dutch were really in control. They were dictating in the first half. And Team USA was already trailing 17 minutes in. Remember, it's soccer, where draws are not terrible. But in the second half, 60 minutes, 50, 58, 59, 60 minutes, somewhere in there, the captain, Lindsey Horan, has a collision with a player that she knows very well. In fact, happens to be one of her club teammates, Danielle Vandedonk. It does not roll off the tongue. Vandedonk. So it's one of her club teammates. She and Lindsey collide, and Lindsey ends up crumpled on the ground. Had a little bit of a struggle getting up. The athletic trainers had to come get her. And play continues, but it was clear that Lindsey was angry. You could see it on her face. Her teammates had to talk her down. Then she and Danielle have a bit of a war of words. And Lindsey actually shoved Danielle. It's easier than saying last names. Vandedonk. I suppose that after you practice it a bit. Danielle Vandedonk. Anyway, Lindsey shoves her. This is right before a corner kick. Apparently, the moral of the story is you won't like her when she's angry.
In swinging ball, headed down, tied at one. She did it, her own.
Lindsey Horan, frustrated by the moment. Well, she owns this one. Drives to that near post. Full commitment. glances that one into the near post by Von Dumpsalar. And we're knotted up 1-1.
Me and Dan always go up against each other. It's a physical battle. I respect her so much because that's how it should be. It should be competitive at all times. So I think once we got into that tackle, all I wanted to do was score. Heat of the moment, I got a little pissed at her, but Rose put in an absolute dime, and I got on the end of it, and yeah, happy for the goal.
Both the play-by-play and the reaction from Lindsey Horan on Fox, Fox Soccer, but actually the game was airing on Big Fox. It's After Hours here on CBS Sports Radio. Speaking about Rose Lavelle, who was the one that delivered the corner kick, and it was perfectly placed. Lindsey with the header perfectly timed and is able to slide it. Well, it was in the air. She was able to head it past the Dutch goalkeeper into the left corner. It was perfect. But in the moments before that, Lindsey Horan has to be calmed down by her teammates. She's jawing at Danielle. She's jawing at the referee, actually, the officials. And then she's kind of jawing with Julie Ertz because she was so fired up. Isn't that the perfect response? I kind of feel like that's what every athlete would envision or would want to do, whether it's soccer or basketball, whether it's on the football field, the American football field, after someone knocks you over or you feel like they're holding, whatever it is, you have a tense exchange with an opponent and then you come back and you score on a header in this case. Yeah, pretty amazing. But something else that jumped out in the second half, even as Team USA was protecting this draw, so they end up 1-1 is the final score. Even though the Americans could not get a second goal into the net, it was clear that they had more energy and that they were the aggressors in the second half. Trinity Rodman actually was the first to congratulate Alex Morgan when they thought they had a second goal. Now, Alex was clearly offside, just a bit, by half a body or so. Trinity Rodman jumps on her thinking they have a second goal, and then right away the offsides flag was up. But it was a much different Team USA in the second half.
Our positioning was a lot better. We were more attack-minded. In the first half, I think we were a little bit more conservative in our movements and the way that we were playing. I think we were looking for the layoff and like kind of turning, swinging it back and forth rather than kind of just going after them. And I think the second half, I mean, you notice there was a lot more flicks in behind. There was more turns. There was more combination between me, Alex, Lindsey, Soph. So I think the connection was a lot better going forward rather than kind of just possessing.
That's a great team there that we just faced. And to keep that team on three shots in 100 minutes, That's a good performance. So very happy with the team, very happy with the mentality, very happy with the belief, especially from the young ones to see or to mimic the older ones, the experienced ones. So looking forward for the next one.
That's Vlatko Antonovsky, the coach of Team USA. So a lot of talk in the first half about how the Americans were outplayed, but also that the decisions made by the coaching staff put them at a disadvantage. Here's what I think about the Americans at the World Cup. It's good for them to play from behind. It really is. They need to be pushed. They need to be challenged. Here they are trying to three-peat at the World Cup level. They are by far the best team in the world. Now, can you lose at any point? Of course you can. They lost in the Olympics. So they can lose. Any team can lose at any given time. That's sport. And when you're talking about a situation like this on a World Cup stage, well, yeah, not only are you talking about teams that are fired up to play the Americans, but they recognize, right, that this is their Super Bowl of sorts when they face the U.S., and so they give it absolutely everything they've got. And then there are some connections too, where you've got opponents who are facing each other that are really familiar with one another. So there's a lot that you can take away from this match. But most importantly, it's good for Team USA to face adversity. Because there are going to be games where they're not pushed, right? There are going to be games where they are so far and away the better team that it's almost like a friendly. Now, they're not going to take it that way, of course. Most of these Americans are veterans or at least have experience wearing the red, white, and blue. But for them to be on this stage, even though this is group play, to be trailing after 17 minutes, to recognize that they were severely outplayed in the first half, that's good. They have to make adjustments. They have to figure it out. They have to lock in and play better in the second half, or they're behind the eight ball. So yeah, good for them. But also good for them to face some adversity early in the Women's World Cup. We'll have a little bit more reaction from that particular game, but now 1-0-1 at the Women's World Cup. Did you hear the breaking news about the Angels and Shohei Ohtani? If not, we will get to that straight ahead. You can find me on Twitter, A-Law Radio, our Facebook page too. I did go back and answer a bunch of your questions from Ask Amy Anything. I didn't quite get through them on Twitter. I did get them answered on Facebook, just not quite on Twitter. So I'll do that as I can. It was a day. I'm just telling you, it was one heck of a day. This actually feels like a relief. Me and my summer squash. It's after hours.
Being a baseball play-by-play broadcaster demands a blend of learned mechanics, intense preparation, and a calm sense of entertainment. How hard is it to do this job? Let's talk to the ones who do it. This is Matt Spiegel. My new podcast, The PBP, Voices of Baseball, will bring those conversations to you as the best working and former broadcasters tell you why and how they do it. New episodes come every Thursday all summer long. Follow The PBP, Voices of Baseball, on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
This is with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Here's the pitch. He swings and drives the ball deep out into left center field. It's out by the wall. And that one is out of here. They pitch to Ohtani and he burns them. And tonight on this Monday night, it is showtime.
And the pitch to Gonzalez. Line shot into right, coming in his angle. He's got the ball. And this one's over. And Lucas Giolito has thrown a no-hitter here at Guaranteed Rate Field. August 25th of 2020, Lucas Giolito no-hits the Pirates.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Why, pray tell, are we playing back-to-back highlights from Shohei Ohtani and Lucas Giolito? Well, for two reasons. They are intertwined on this Wednesday night with the breaking news. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. First, you hear Terry Smith on Angels Radio and then Ed Farmer on White Sox Radio going back to 2020 when Giolito had his no-hitter. The Angels are not, as I emphasize and underscore and capitalize, not selling at the trade deadline. And that includes Shohei Ohtani. They've decided that they will keep Shohei Ohtani on the roster. They will take their chances through the rest of the Major League Baseball season, believing that they have a real chance to end their playoff drought. And not just that. So the Angels haven't made the playoffs since 14, but they haven't had a winning record since 15. So what they're hoping here is that as they are now three games above 500 with the way they've played post All-Star break, yes, Ohtani, although you might have noticed he's hit a bit of a lull. I wouldn't call it a slump, but he's hit a lull. They actually have moved his start up again. It got pushed back to Friday. Now they've moved it up again in advance of the trade deadline. And while the Angels did field some calls about Ohtani, they ultimately have decided that they are right in the mix for an American League wildcard spot, if not the AL West title. They're seven out right now. Their game against Detroit got postponed on Wednesday. And so in also deciding that they would pull Shohei Ohtani off the market, This was originally reported by Tom Verducci of SI, Sports Illustrated, but now it's been confirmed in other places. They will not trade Shohei Ohtani before next week's deadline. And in addition, they've decided to buy. They are doubling down, not selling, not standing pat, but buying instead. And they trade for Lucas Giolito and a right-handed reliever, Ronaldo Lopez, from the White Sox, and give up two top prospects. Now, we had spoken about the Angels. I believe it was Jeff Fletcher who joined us, right, from SoCal News Group. That goes back a few weeks ago now. And he had said the number one reason that the Angels have been unable to end their playoff drought is their farm system stinks. It's thin. It's unreliable. It's not generating the kind of talent that's been able to help them. Instead, they've chosen to go the free agent route. Well, they just gave up two of their top prospects so that they can make the playoffs, or at least make a serious run now. They're going to get Mike Trout back. Right now, sitting four games out of the final wild card spot, seven games out in the AL West. But keeping Ohtani, reinserting Mike Trout, and now I think you could say that Lucas Giolito is one of the top pitchers available, or he was available at the trade deadline, if not the number one guy, the number one target for teams looking for starting rotation help. And they get both Giolito and a reliever. White Sox general manager Rick Hahn made the difficult choice to trade away one of his top arms.
Quite frankly, it was a mildly emotional conversation with Lucas a few moments ago, informing him of the trade. Obviously, given this club's performance over the course of the last several months, it's apparent that these type of moves have to take place given where we're at and putting us in the best position we can be going forward. That said, obviously Lucas's and Ronaldo's tenure with the White Sox is not ending in the way that we envisioned when we first acquired them. And I complimented both of them not just on their performances on the field, but the players they were in our clubhouse and the way they represented them and themselves and this club off the field, which meant a great deal over their tenure.
White Sox GM Rick Hahn reacting or explaining how emotional it was to trade away these two players, including Giolito, who's not even 30 years old yet, would have been a free agent after the season. So keep that in mind. The White Sox maybe wouldn't be able to retain him and would have. Well, and it's actually very similar to where the Angels are, right, with Shohei Ohtani. Giolito would have been able to pick his next destination. And if you're looking for a contender, a guy who's 29 years old, you want to pitch for a contender, well, then you're, and not to mention there's going to be money flying at you, well, then the White Sox were in real danger of losing him. And so instead, they trade him away. Right now, his ERA is at 3.79, and he's a strikeout guy, so he can really help the Angels. Their earned run average as an, like as a team, so as a team rotation, is bottom third in Major League Baseball, so that's been one of the weaknesses for them. They've had a ton of injuries, of course, but they'll be able to insert him into that starting rotation right away. So this is just the start for the Angels. According to some speculation, they are planning on being even more aggressive. Ohtani's not on the move. He's staying with Anaheim. Mike Trout will be getting healthy at some point soon, I hope. They add Lucas Giolito and a reliever. They're going all in. That is the question. Answered loudly and proudly by the Angels. No, we are not trading Ohtani. If, in fact, he leaves us, it'll be of his own accord. We're not sending him somewhere else. And if they make the playoffs, they have a very good shot at keeping him. They've got plenty of money. He just wants to pitch for a winner and a contender. Shohei will remain with the Angels, and we'll see if Showtime ends up extending into October. Even if you're not an Angels fan, I don't know anyone who doesn't want that. Showtime, we got it in the World Baseball Classic. We've seen it at the All-Star Game, Home Run Derby. Well, now it'd be super cool to see it in October in the baseball postseason.
It is showtime.
You can find me on Twitter, A-Law Radio, on our Facebook page, too. Coming up, I promised you, Joey Votto at least once an hour. You don't want to miss it. And a little bit about the baseball playoff races. I feel like it's almost cheating to use playoff this early in the summer, though we are now into the final few days of July, right before the trade deadline. How about this? Division races. There are some cool division battles that are going on. And then as we hit the top of next hour, oh, hey, buckle up. There's so much from the football realm that we have to get to. Good to have you with us. I don't even know if I'm going to be able to get to everything tonight. I have so much stuffed into my brain, but I'll zip it and we'll move on to our update.
I covered it.
It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast.
Oh, two hit well, right field. This one definitely has a chance. Santander at the wall. It's gone. Edmundo Sosa with an opposite field home run that unties the game here in the bottom of the seventh inning. His seventh of the year, and the Phillies are back in front 5-4.
Sosa, I mean, huge homer. That was awesome. I was going crazy when he hit the foul ball. And then very next pitch, he goes deep, so... you can tell this is a winning ball club here.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Sosa with the big home run for the Phillies, and they're able to get another one against the Baltimore Orioles. This is a 6-4 final, required them to come from behind there in the seventh. Well, it was tied, so yeah. They were up, then the Orioles tied it, and then they had to win it a second time, if you will. Phillies, are they going to make another push here? Orioles still able to maintain that lead atop the AL East by a game and a half because the Tampa Bay Rays, they have a new policy. They only win once a week. And so the Orioles and the Phillies do battle. Baltimore's now dropped two in a row. Phillies, of course, are... Well, I would say they're playing for a wild card, but don't tell them that, right? Because there's still plenty of time to go, lots of real estate, and theoretically, they could catch the Braves. It's possible. Is it likely? No. So I guess they're not mathematically eliminated from the NLE's title chase. However, seems as though... The wild card is much more realistic for the Phillies. Of course, we know what they did with it last year. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Scott Fransky on Orioles Radio. Jake Cave there with the home run. I mean, with the talk about the home run, excuse me. Sosa with the home run. He had an RBI double, and so he was able to chip in as well. And, yeah, with the experience they have on the club, the leadership specifically, there's lots of talent there. You could see them getting it together. Just last year, they started, below 500? They were, 12 games below in... Oh, that was the Nationals a couple years back. They were way out, double figures out in the NL East going back to May. They made that change to Rob Thompson at manager and were able to really start to climb after that. But it was May when that happened. Hard to imagine the Braves backpedaling enough for the Phillies to be able to catch them. But yes, wild cards galore in both the American League and the National League. As for Baltimore, they're going to be locked in a fight. And what did we hear from Brandon Hyde going back to Tuesday evening was that, hey, if you continue to play in these really close and tight games, well, then you're going to end up losing a few of them. So this one, same thing, a 4-4 game in the seventh inning and weren't able to come up with anything after that. And I wouldn't say the offense was flat. It's just, gosh, they do live on the edge a bunch. They do not blow teams out.
Got a big three-run homer. Didn't do much after that until we got an RBI single by Hayes, and then didn't do anything after that. So tough to, you know, in this ballpark, especially against offenses like this, it's tough to just score a few runs and try to win a game.
It's going to be a lot of fun to see the Orioles and Rays do battle down the stretch. Right now, we're waiting to see what happens with Yankees, Red Sox, Blue Jays even. All those teams are above 500. Crazy enough, the worst team in this division would be in first place in the AL Central. The Yankees have a better winning percentage. The last place team in the American League East has a better winning percentage than the Minnesota Twins. And so they would be the leader in the AL Central. Yankees are 6 games above 500 in dead last in the East. The Red Sox are 8 games above 500, and they're fourth place. The Blue Jays, they're 11 games above 500. They would be leading both the NL Central and the AL Central, and actually would be second place in the NL West. I mean, these are some really good teams. But right now, Rays and Orioles separated by a game and a half, both of them at 62 wins. So the Rays just have played a handful more games and they've all been losses. It's After Hours on CBS Sports Radio. Atop the NL Central, Brewers, Reds going back and forth this week.
And the 1-2 delivery, and it's a swing and a miss. He struck out De La Cruz. He blew that one right by him. Back to back. He did it to end the fifth, so he struck out 4 in a row now. Peralta deals again. He struck him out swinging. And the inning is over. He strikes out the side for the second time today. He did it to open the game.
I was feeling great today since I was warming up. And the bullpen before the game, I was feeling great. And I let Contreras know that I was feeling that I had everything working today. And since the first inning, I was comfortable.
Freddie Peralta was brilliant for the Milwaukee Brewers. Bob Uecker with the calls there on the Brewers Radio Network. So Freddie goes through the sixth, scoreless, only allows four hits, but strikes out 13. In fact, this was a scoreless game until the seventh inning when finally Tyrone Taylor is able to hit a home run. That comes in the seventh. They tack on another run in the eighth. So they're able to blank the Reds 3-0. And it was a fun pitcher's duel. Ben Lively only gave up a couple of runs, and he called it a mistake, the pitch to Taylor that Taylor was able to hit out of the park. So right now you've got the Reds just don't want to see the Milwaukee Brewers. They're kind of glad that they don't have to see them again. But the Brewers are also sitting on a game and a half lead over Cincinnati. So same spread as what we have in the AL East. And for Craig Counsell, for David Bell, I mean, the strategies and the different tones and the different, what's the word I'm looking for? Really the different, why does the word escape me right now? The games were just different. I wanted to be a little more flowery than that. Didn't quite come out the way that I wanted it to. Each game had its own personality, right? So this one happens to be a pitcher's duel. We saw these teams go back and forth. And so the two teams atop the NL Central, they also have to duke it out for the rest of the summer on into the stretch run. But that's not till September. September stretch run. It's After Hours here on CBS Sports Radio. Joey Votto, one of the characters on the Reds, and we had talked about him and Ellie De La Cruz and how they're separated so much by age, and yet Votto gets along really well with the young guys and has such a great personality. We've seen him and heard him mic'd up in All-Star games before, or games that are on national TV. He's healthy again now and is able to be part of what the Reds are doing, trying to win a division title and grab a playoff spot. Well, apparently, Christopher Russo on MLB Network, as part of High Heat, had recently indicated that Joey Votto is not a Hall of Famer. Votto was a guest on High Heat on MLB Network, and he did not forget what Russo had to say.
A couple of months ago, you said that Zach Greinke and I are Hall of Very Good Ballplayers. I think Zach and I would agree. You may be right. But I get the gist of what's going on here. I know what you're doing. You're looking down on us. A couple small market Midwest ball players, just because we're not big city, just like you, Mr. New York City, Sirius XM radio star, Mr. National Television, ESPN star, with your Fifth Avenue ties and your crisp pocket squares, your tailored suits and your polished shoes and your hair, your perfectly coiffed Broadway hair. Must be nice to sit atop that Madison Avenue ivory tower, looking down on us with those luscious locks. Not everyone can be the next Roger Peckinpah, Mad Dog. You should be ashamed of yourself. You're a disgrace.
First, when I saw it, I thought, is that from a movie? And I just don't know what movie scene he's imitating. But I've asked a few people, and it doesn't surprise me at all that Joey Votto is completely off the cuff. That's his version of improv. Now, I wonder if he practiced that in the mirror.
No. And your hair, your perfectly coiffed Broadway hair.
Russo ends up applauding him and just his face the whole time. If you haven't seen the video, it's out there on Twitter from MLB Network's High Heat. Alana Rizzo, she kind of, weirdly enough, they had two cameras, so a split screen, and then about halfway through Votto's rant, they brought in Rizzo, and so it's three different cameras. But she just sat there, incredulous at Joey Votto.
You're a disgrace.
Russo starts to yell and applaud him because it was brilliant. It was brilliant improv, brilliant comedy, and maybe a little bit of truth to what Joey Votto was saying to Christopher Russo. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence, CBS Sports Radio.